Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. And it seemed as though Boris Johnson was getting away with it. He had come up with a plan to kick off the new term by breaking not one but two manifesto pledges. And despite lots of angry briefings, his party has broadly supported it and the vote passed comfortably. Yet, we now have a YouGov poll and, James, it paints a less rosy picture, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is the first one with Labour ahead for a long time. I think 149 polls have had the Tories in the lead. And I think this will change the political mood. You know, it is one poll, and we should caution that. But I mean, the point is that Tory MPs reluctantly accept this policy. They don't actively like it. And so if it turns out to be politically unpopular, then I think they will be more against it than they were before. And I think it will add to Tory worries about, you know, what have we done to our reputation for being the party of low taxes? Now, obviously the question is whether this is sustained or not. And I think the kind of consolation for the Tories is that this poll only has Labour up to 35%. It's not, people are not switching straight from, in any large number, straight from the Tories to Labour. They are going all over the place. You know, Reform goes up a bit, the Lib Dems go up a bit. And I think the question is, you know, what happens? But I think that one of Boris Johnson's weaknesses has always been that his relationship with his party is very transactional. It is based on him being a winner. And if that perception begins to ebb, that will cause him some problems. But just to put things in context, though, you would normally expect a governing party to be behind in midterm. I was just reading your Guardian piece, Katie, and looking back at what the polls were before David Cameron delivered the Bloomberg speech, and Labour were regularly ahead by 8-9 points. So we should keep this in context.
Fraser, do you think there's going to be alarm bells ringing in number 10? We know that Boris Johnson does like to look at polls.
Yes, and we also know that Boris Johnson treasures his opinion poll leads, treasures his high approval rating. It's probably his most prized possession. I know that there was one minister who regards him as a kind of Scrooge-like figure, just counting his opinion poll lead every night. Look at you, my precious, you know. Then again, I would like to meet with Downing Street strategists who thought that if you go out there and you renege on a manifesto pledge, if you renege on a read my lips, I won't raise taxes pledge, and then break your word, what do you expect the opinion polls to do? Of course there's going to be a caustic opinion poll. I would be very surprised if this wasn't in the game plan, and if it wasn't, then it certainly should have been. I'm actually struck when I see that YouGov poll, not by the fact that the Tory popularity is collapsing or that Labour is ahead for the first time in I don't know how long. It's just how close the two parties still are. You kind of think, well, what more does Boris Johnson have to do before he gets people really seriously thinking that Labour might be better? You can't get a more egregious breach in politics than reneging on a solemn manifesto pledge. And Boris Johnson has done it, and he's had, I would regard as a fairly mild poll rebuke. It's not quite as bad for him as, for example, it isn't with Joe Biden in America, where a bunch of factors are now combining to bring Biden's popularity down, not just Afghanistan, but the border situation, the domestic economy. With Boris Johnson, this is I don't think anybody is going to welcome a tax rise. There isn't anybody, any worker in this country, who's not going to be paying significantly more to the government as a result of this. If you're on 50 grand, you're going to be paying an extra £500 a year and multiples up and down thereof. If you're a minimum wage worker, you're going to be paying £100 a year. That's money you do not have and you shouldn't be having to pay to the government. So I think the poll hit is to be expected, and it will have been in the plan. The gamble is that the money will be able to make and grow something good, and it will be a net positive in the end.
And James, Fraser's point there that actually a number 10 of any sense would have probably anticipated some form of backlash by doing what they're doing. Do you think that is the case when we saw in that press conference Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, Sajid Javid talking about difficult decisions, trying to own the decision, trying to, you know, not look as though they're deceiving the public? Do you think they are? That was kind of part of the strategy.
Yeah, I think if you look at all their messaging this week, it has all been the idea of, you know, we take tough decisions, you know, that you know, other governments have ducked the challenge of social care. We will come up with a solution to it. I think, though, this poll is a reminder of how politically difficult social care is. You know, in 2017, Theresa May came out of her social care policy rather ill-advisedly in the middle of a general election campaign. And, you know, the polls turned. Boris Johnson comes out of his social care policy. And, you know, you get a big shift in the polls away from his party. I'll have to see whether it's sustained or not. But I think it is because social care is a policy question to which there is no good answer. You know, Theresa May's approach of saying, well, people can sell their assets to cover the cost of their care, you know, was very unpopular, branded the dementia tax. Boris Johnson said, OK, well, the only way we can guarantee that people won't have to sell their assets to pay for their care is to find another way of funding it through the tax system. That doesn't look like it's popular either. I think one of the things that will worry number 10 as well, though, is that the drop-off in support among pensioners seems particularly high. And we should be careful because these polls are relatively small sample sizes. But there is a worry that maybe the ditching of the pension triple lock, which almost went unnoticed on Tuesday amidst everything else. And this was just seen as a kind of way of trying to say, oh, we're not putting all the burden on the working age population. But that policy might prove to have hit the Tories harder than people expected.
I think there's two other aspects of the opinion polls here. I mean, it's certainly the way that it's gone down, the policy has gone down worse in the north than it has in the south, as you might expect. Because this policy helps those with larger assets who tend to be in the south, it hits those on lower wages who tend to be in the north. So this is, as you'd expect, an unhelpful geographical divide for a prime minister who prides himself on being the man who tackled the red wall. The other thing is the pensioners. I think this could be, at the end of my cover article in this week's magazine, I quote a minister who is saying that maybe we're getting the pensioners wrong. They don't want to be bribed. They don't want to have their £1 million assets insured. What they want above all, and what they will vote for, is a party that gives their grandchildren the same opportunities which they had. Now, I think the politicians right now, James is sort of laughing at me.
No, it's just, I'm the cynic saying they're cross about not getting an 8% increase in the state pension this year. You're saying that they're worried about the intergenerational unfairness.
Fraser's choosing to believe in people.
I think it reflects badly on my views of human nature.
And perhaps it reflects with naivety on mine. But I've had quite a few emails from not only listeners to this podcast, which, by the way, inspired me to write the cover story, but also readers of the magazine have got in touch. To say that I'm 75 years old, I'm 80 years old, I completely agree with you, I should not be being given the subsidy by the government. And I think there gets a mistake that during election times, all parties think two things. One, that the public are stupid and need to be given these really sort of juvenile slogans, like playground style, to get them into their head. And secondly, that the only thing that will make an older person vote for them is a bribe. I think that is wrong. And I think if somebody manages to come up with a more coherent, attractive political message to older people who do have huge political power, I think there is another way than bribery.
And James, when we're looking at that poll, it was mentioned briefly, but you can see Labour's only gone up by 1 point. So it's not as though Keir Starmer's taking votes from Tories in any clear sense. Lib Dems have gone up slightly. And then you also have the Reform Party. Now, one of the things that's helped Boris Johnson is the fact that he hasn't really had a Nigel Farage figure on the right that some of the Tory MPs unhappy with the situation could use as leverage. Do you think you could start to see the Reform Party doing that? Or is 5% still fairly marginal on this?
In fact, James, could you tell us a little bit more about the Reform Party? Many of our podcast listeners weren't quite, you know.
So this is Richard Tice is the leader of the Reform Party. It is essentially the kind of the descendant of the Brexit Party. I think, yeah, and but it's kind of small state-ish, you know. I think the point is there is a. One of the things I think is that this week would have been different if Nigel Farage was still on the political field. Because I mean, there would have been someone who's very, you know, I think Tice just doesn't have that same name recognition and ability to kind of propel himself into the public debate. You know, yes, they've gone up to five, but I think that is more kind of people just saying, I'm not voting for the Tories, because you know they haven't hugely been part of a conversation. But I do think this is one of the big risks for the Tories. If you got a kind of taxpayer revolt party, you know, a kind of, you know, the tax burden is too high, get them down, you know, that obviously is a political vulnerability for the Tories now that they've decided to raise taxes. Indeed, I think one of the interesting things about this week is that the Tories have decided that their reputation for fiscal responsibility is more important to them than their reputation for low taxes.
Their former reputation for low taxes.
Yeah, I mean, in that they, but in this week they had a choice between these. If you wanted to do this policy, right, you had a choice between these two things. You could have said, "Oh, we're going to borrow the money and keep taxes where they are," or you could have said, "We can't borrow the money. That's just not fiscally credible. So we're going to have to put up tax."
But I think it's also worth noting that I think wasn't Nadeem Zahawi who corrected somebody when this is party of low taxation. He's now we're the party of fair taxation. Interesting that even the Tories now can't credibly claim to be the low-tax party.
Though Boris Johnson has since tried with the 1922 committee.
Yeah, and using new rationale, thinking, well, we're lower tax than the French, we're lower tax than the Swedes. So this is another definition of Tories as a low-tax party, that we don't have the highest taxes in Europe. Well, you know, Britain always used to be the kind of third way between Europe and America. We'd have less tax and spend in Europe, more tax and spend in the US. The fact that there are a few more European parties above us does not make Britain a low-tax country. The Tories are another party of the highest taxes in our peacetime history. And I just get, James, hearing you just talk about being a low-tax party there, I just wonder how many, you know, they weren't particularly low-tax under David Cameron. It's always been like, you know, give me low taxes, Lord, but not yet kind of thing. I do wonder if they've just stopped being able to make that claim with any credibility as of this week.
Yeah, I think there is also an interesting argument, which is you look around, all the demands for government are increasing, and we do appear at the moment to be not just in the UK but kind of almost across the Western world a moment of kind of an ever bigger state, right? And an ever bigger state needs to be paid for, and so that suggests a kind of ever higher tax burden. And
well, that's a good question, but perhaps one for a different podcast.
And
seriously, that's a good one. Why make a Saturday one on that?
And you can hear more about that on our Saturday podcast, which is out tomorrow. Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser.